Do you need to boost your marketing strategy and level up your brand game? Are you looking to get noticed and have a product or service to market? Well, whether you're looking to switch gears in your career or trying to market your organization in these times, this episode will give you some basic marketing tips to get you started. Welcome to the Planners on Purpose podcast, a resource that empowers you as an event planner or professional to live your life on purpose. I'm Naomi Tucker, your host today. A big shout out to those of you that join me here every single week, and a very special warm welcome to those that are first-time listeners. I'm so happy to have you. If you're an event planner or in the event industry, and you're always busy juggling the responsibilities of work and life, then this podcast is for you. It's designed to help empower you with tips and tools and encouragement for you to make the next best step while you balance all of the crazy. I encourage you to go ahead and subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss out on any of the exciting episodes that are on the horizon. So a quick reminder today for those of you that are joining me at our book club, I'll see you Wednesday, November 18th, at 7 p.m. on the Planners on Purpose Facebook page. We'll be discussing Big Magic by Elizabeth Gilbert. It's such a fantastic book, and we'll be talking about living creatively beyond fear. So I can't wait for you to join me. And you still have time to binge read or just come for the conversation and soak up all the tips that we'll be sharing. Today, we welcome Tom Pick. He is a digital marketing consultant who helps B2B clients improve their online visibility. He helps them increase brand awareness, generate leads through SEO, social media, content, and influencer marketing. He's the founder of WebEquity and also the editor of the WebEquity B2B marketing blog and author of The Ultimate Guide to Content Marketing Software. Tom has been named to several lists on the B2B and social media influencers, written for leading blogs, quoted in publications including Fast Company, Forbes, and Huffington Post, and Inc. Magazine. And he's also presented at blogging and social media conferences. I'm excited to have Tom on the podcast, and I really hope that you enjoy our conversation today. Tom, I can't wait to pick your brain on how event planners can leverage basic marketing principles to help make themselves more relevant and marketable in today's society. So welcome and thank you so much for being here.
Great. Well, thanks, Naomi, for having me. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So I didn't tell my listeners that me and you have been corresponding over social media probably for the last, I don't know, has it been a couple of years?
It's at least a couple of years. Yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like an opportune time for us to actually get together on the phone and talk a little bit of marketing. So it's funny that we haven't done that, but I'm happy that we're taking that opportunity now.
Ditto.
Yeah. So why don't you tell everyone a little bit more about yourself and how WebEquity came to be?
As you noted, I do B2B digital marketing for small to mid-size, usually B2B technology companies, some professional services, training companies, folks like that as well. And I've worked with several companies in the event space. So both event tech, event planners, and some of the support people like lighting and sound company. So how this got started, back in 2010, I started writing the WebEquity blog, and it was sort of around this concept that I was working on with clients at that time about sort of being everywhere online. So being everywhere that your prospective customers may be looking when they're looking for whatever it is that you have to offer, and being there with your messaging. I had a different blog going way back that was on Blogger, and realized that platform was kind of fading away, and WordPress was the place to be. And a lot of my clients were on WordPress, so I really wanted to learn that. So I started the new blog in 2010 on WordPress. At the time, I was working for a small agency. I went back into the corporate world for a little bit, and then when I came out, decided to do my own thing. And so since I had the blog, I just sort of started it. Use that as the name for my LLC. So WebEquity LLC has been my own consulting agency since January of 2017. So coming up on 4 years.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Well, that's awesome. So, and it seems you spent so many years in marketing, and I would say you've had so many learnings over the years. So would you feel like everything came easy to you, or did you find yourself stumbling along the way?
Sort of a mix. I would say that I was really naive when I first got into marketing. Mm-hmm. I actually started my career in an engineering group, engineering documentation group, doing technical writing, and realized that wasn't what I wanted to do forever. So I went back to school, got my MBA, moved into marketing, and at first just would take meetings with everybody and not realizing that most people just wanted to sell me something as a corporate marketer. So it was a kind of a big adjustment of time management, going from the engineering side, which is a little quieter, to marketing, which is a lot more interactivity.
I bet.
And doing that within the corporate realm, and made that adjustment. And then, of course, in 2005, 2006 timeframe, when I kind of left the corporate world and went into the agency world, that was another big adjustment in terms of how I manage my time, right? Because in this space, it's all about billable, you know, time for the client. So there's a lot of just general things that have to be done to keep the business going,
right?
The answering emails, you know, bookkeeping, those sorts of things that aren't billable because they're directly adding value to clients. So again, it was a shift really in terms of time management, of learning how to be very efficient at those kinds of tasks so that I could really focus on doing the stuff I love, which is the value added work for my clients.
So what do you enjoy most about what you do right now for your clients?
There is just no end of the variety of challenges. And a lot of it is creative problem solving. And it's a moving target, right? And the way that digital marketing works, especially, is constantly changing. There are new channels, new practices and techniques, and some of the old things go away. The practice of search engine optimization, SEO, right, has changed a lot over the years from some tactics that worked,
I bet, it just
15
seems
years
like
ago that are completely different today.
Yes, absolutely. It seems as though it changes each year. There's something new, right, to learn about marketing. So for you, with you having so many years in marketing, if you were to choose anything different right now, what would you pick? Because you've been in marketing for quite some time.
Yeah. I don't know if I should say, going on 3 decades. So it's been a while. I can't imagine doing anything else at this point. I hope to do this for another decade at least. Really enjoy what I'm doing and the kinds of clients that I have an opportunity to work with, just great people and really fascinating products. I love technology, so I really love, you know, the realm I'm working in, and love the event space as well. I mean, just the so many wonderful people, as I'm sure you know, having networked in the space for as long as you have. It really is just a fantastic group of people. One of the things I do is influencer marketing, and it's probably been easier in the event space than other industries where I've done this, in the IT space, in retail technology, in HR technology. It's just because of the people in this space that are so wonderful and always willing to say yes to things and to help out. I mean, if I did anything else now, it would maybe being like a college professor, but this is really not a good time for that industry particularly. So that's about the only other thing that would have interest. If I could go back in time and do it all over, I mean, I would probably do this. I might do supply chain because that's also an interesting area. I've done quite a bit of work with supply chain software companies. So that's a very interesting space to me. And it's also creative problem solving, which is one of the things I like to do. And if I were back at that stage, young and just getting out of college, knowing what I know now, I would really try to get into a McKinsey or some type of smaller consulting firm. They work you like a dog, but you learn so much so fast, and it's incredibly valuable throughout your career. So that would be a great way to start.
Oh, wow. So much to learn there. I don't know. For me, I don't know, Tom, I might have to just go do something in music. That was my roots.
There you go.
I fell into the industry. So I would probably be in the orchestra somewhere, somebody's orchestra. so So yeah, I probably wouldn't be in the, be too much in the industry if I would have to choose, but I love what I do.
Yeah, that's that would be a tough place to be right now as well.
Exactly.
It's not a great time to be a performer.
No, no. Yeah, absolutely. We're good where we are now, right?
Exactly.
So tell me how the pandemic has affected your business. You said you do a lot with influencer marketing. Where are you now and how has it affected your business?
So initially, because like I say, I had a few event related clients, they obviously, they went dormant pretty much right away in back in April. They had to. I mean, there was, you know, demand collapsed. Mm-hmm. So my business took a little bit of a hit at that time. I had another client, a consulting company that was heavily travel reliant. So they kind of cut back as well. Summer was a little slow, which wasn't all bad. I spent a lot of time working on my business, which, mm-hmm. right, you don't always have a chance to do. I'm sure you know, right?
You don't always have a chance to do that.
So kind of making some improvements to my website and doing some things like this. I did a podcast with Sky Cassidy. Mm. You know him. I was on a virtual panel. I did a presentation at Twin Cities Startup Week in October on influencer marketing. So that was kind of fun. So I've had more time to do those sorts of things. Mm-hmm. But really once September 1st kicked in, the phone started ringing again and things have really picked up. The consulting client I mentioned has come back. They've figured out how to do more of their work virtually, so their business is picking up. So they brought me back in. Mm-hmm. I stayed in touch with the folks in the event space, and you know, hopefully this doesn't last too much longer, and people start planning because the lead times are out there. They're
right.
Many months in the future. So hopefully we're not too far away from the point where people feel confident scheduling something 6 months out. And then I also brought on one virtual event technology client, a company called Shindig, which is sort of a competitor to Zoom or those types of platforms, Hopin, Remo. So it's that's been very interesting and learning a lot about that space, that side of the technology, right? The more the virtual event piece as opposed to the live events. So
that's great. I had an opportunity to actually see Shindig's platform because they did a demo for Meetings and Incentives Worldwide. So that was really nice to see. Okay. So
what did you think? Great.
I liked it. It's definitely a different type of interface. It gives a different experience. I like it. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So I know you mentioned, obviously, the pandemic has shifted business, right? And hopefully we're seeing things trickle back in. So can you tell us why you feel like marketing is more important now than ever before for individuals, businesses?
Yeah, it in a way, I guess it is and it isn't. There is the famous quote from Peter Drucker that the only two functions of an enterprise are innovation and marketing. So in that sense, marketing has kind of, you know, always been a very important part of what organizations do. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, it in a way is more important right now because marketing, when it's really done right, isn't so much about, hey, buy my stuff, you know, mm-hmm. buy my stuff. Look how great I am, that kind of thing. It's more about helping people solve a problem that they have. Mm-hmm. So you've got a product, a service or whatever. There's a specific group of people out there who have a specific type of problem that you can solve. Mm-hmm. So it's really more about helping those people solve that problem. By educating the market, by putting useful content out there, mm-hmm. and sort of, yes, also by selling what it is you have to sell, but it's more of a, if it's done right, it's really about you helping those people solve those particular issues that they're dealing with.
And you would say that would be the case regardless if I'm an individual looking out for, you know, myself, my personal brand versus, an actual business looking to, you know, sell, let's say, a service. It would be the same with either scenario?
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there's some difference in the techniques and channels you might use, but it's still, at the end of the day, it's about solving a problem for that person whom you want to be your customer.
Okay. And that's an excellent tip. What about some other tips on how individuals and businesses can either start or enhance their social media presence? So let's say they're starting off, or let's say maybe they want to take your advice and move it to the next level. What tips would you give them to get it all kicked off?
The first thing is to just start with strategy, right? Mm-hmm. Think about what is it that you want to accomplish on social media. Mm-hmm. And of course, obviously think about where your prospects are, because a platform like Instagram can be great for, it was great on the consumer side, but even on the B2B side, it can be great for event planners, because events are very visual. Mm-hmm. Or certain other types of products that have that are very visual products. For others, it's not a great, for enterprise software or something. I mean, no, it's not the place to be. LinkedIn, definitely, probably Twitter as well. Mm-hmm. Maybe a bit on Facebook, but those are certainly the top platforms. So knowing where your prospective customers are hanging out and the influencers that you want to engage also are hanging out. And then, like I say, so what is it that you want to accomplish? Who do you want to, what kind of people do you want to engage with? Mm-hmm. How are you going to go about sort of getting their attention and sharing their content and hopefully, getting them to interact with you? Yeah. It's partly about, right, it's partly about promoting your own content, but it has to be about more than that. And it's really important to be doing monitoring and understanding, being aware of when people are talking about either certain topics that are very important to you, or certainly about your brand, if they're actually talking about you, about your company, so that you can jump in
make
and
sure that that's good.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for that. And so you would say that Twitter is still hanging in there as one of the top tools, right, for social media presence?
I think so. It's been interesting in the last year or so. I've done some research on this, and I'm still seeing, I mean, technology companies are generally out there. I have seen some drop off. There is some skepticism because there's a lot of noise on Twitter that brands don't necessarily want to be part of. Mm. And that can be a little frustrating. It's still got a lot of potential, a lot of effectiveness as a platform. And I'm working with clients in places like not just event marketing, but in business intelligence and data analytics. And there's a lot of activity in those realms on Twitter yet. But there's a lot of noise and things as well. And I actually wrote a post a couple of months back about, is it time for a business Twitter, which Jack hasn't responded yet, but I think it would be a potentially fascinating idea, right? So it would be a more sort of buttoned down version of Twitter that's more for professionals and would be kind of separate from the celebrity gossip and those types of things that,
you there's know, so much complaining, I feel like, going on Twitter.
And a lot of that, too.
It can be negative. So I've heard and I've experienced, too. So, and I would think in the pandemic, people might maybe gravitated towards platforms that made them feel more together, like the Facebook, like the Instagram. Perhaps that's the reason for the drop off. But it's interesting to see, perhaps they might take a different direction with it. So
I believe there's potential there. But if on the road they're currently on, I just think there's a lot of, as you mentioned, the negativity and some inappropriate kind of content for a business to have their brand mixed in with.
Thank you. I would like to talk a little bit about automation, because I feel like within the social media, we see lots of different automation tools being used, because sometimes it takes a lot to get information out there. You have to have different touch points over and over again in order to be able to get some engagement. So can you tell us, though, the pros and cons of using that automation technology to build up your online presence?
Automation can help in a number of areas. It can definitely help with finding, thought leadership content from key people that you want to share. Mm-hmm. It can help, as you mentioned, with your postings. So if you want to get certain content out there, like I put out a blog post on Tuesday, but then I retweet it again a week later, or 3 weeks later, whatever. It's some kind of regular posting schedule like that. So it can definitely help in those areas. I would caution people to be a little bit careful with it, because it is ultimately social media is social, right? It's about interacting with people, and that's not something that can be automated. And it can also be, you also have to be careful if you're getting sort of too far ahead of yourself. So think about, right, the kind of content that event planners were posting at the beginning of March, for example, and how quickly they had to pull back and change all of that, because things were changing, events were being canceled, or they were being moved online. So they were, you know, the venue, the delivery mechanism was changing. So you gotta be careful about using automation, getting too far out ahead where you have to go out and remove posts because something has changed or something has been canceled. Or something has been added, a guest has been swapped out, you know, any kind of change like that. So there is I need to be a little bit careful about that. I mentioned monitoring, how important that is. And that, again, that's the area where you definitely need a tool to do that. Mm-hmm. And there are some good ones out there, some good brand monitoring tools at every price level from, you know, suitable for a very small organization, up to enterprise level tools that are quite pricey but quite sophisticated as well. So the monitoring part is automated, right? There's technology doing that, but there's still the human element of when you see those things pop up, jumping out there and engaging, whether it's thanking someone for being an advocate, which is a nice thing, right? The thing you hope you have to do a lot. You know, the less pleasant thing, which is, you know, addressing a complaint, or just responding to questions that people have. If sometimes people are just asking questions about brands and they're not necessarily positive or negative, but you want to make sure that you're spotting those and jumping in and engaging in a timely manner.
I mean, I feel like you put an important point in there as far as looking out for what is happening in the industry that you're in too. When it happened back in March, I think a lot of people wanted to push the events going forward, like, hey, let's go forward. But quickly they had to realize we have to reel back. This is a safety issue. This is a governmental issue. And we might need to change our messaging with that too. So I've seen the change in how people have repositioned themselves with that too in the messaging. So very important.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. So tell us, with your experience, what has been the biggest challenge in your role right now? And what are you doing how are you planning to overcome it? I always like to hear of what challenges are going on in different industries.
It helps that my client base, again, is kind of diverse in terms of their different types of technologies. They're in different segments. So that's been helpful. I don't know that it's been a huge challenge for me personally, but I've seen some of this and I've talked to people about it, and it's definitely been in the press. I guess the notion of ageism, right? So especially with tech founders, with 30 something year old tech founders, are they open to working with someone with, you know, a few gray hairs? Are they concerned that this person isn't current with the new technologies or new promotional channels, those sorts of things? So there is a little bit of that I've seen, and again, I've also spoken with people, and it happens definitely on the corporate marketing side as well. It's a lot. I've known people who've lost their jobs at 45 or 50 or 55, and it's very difficult to get back in. So I think that's a really misguided, right? Sort of, well, any ism is misguided generally.
Right.
But that's one that really, I think there's a lot of value in the experience. And the professionals that I work with are very adept at keeping up with blogs and podcasts like this, right, and other media, so that they're very current on their practices and their viewpoints. So they've got the benefit of experience, but they're also keeping up with the new technology. So there's not a good reason for that, but it can be some of a barrier or a challenge at times.
Yeah, I could see that. I can see that. Well, thank you so much. I think it's just wonderful to be able to hear what we can do to be able to enhance our experience, and just learning from you a little bit about making sure that you're in there, that you're servicing your audience, that you're putting your ear to the street on what they're talking about so that they can hear from you and how you can serve them, and really managing those automation tools so that you don't get too far out of touch with what's going on and what's happening in reality. So thank you. I appreciate that. So as we close out, I just had a few fun questions for you. I am a big reader, so I love to see what everyone is reading and what's on their bookshelf, and actually to get a few new recommendations for myself. So what is your favorite book that you just absolutely love that you would recommend to anyone to read?
Oh, boy. As you can see, I've got a rather full bookshelf behind me. So, yeah. A lot of books. Just in general, over my life, a very old book, Candide by Voltaire, is one of my all-time favorites.
Okay.
And it's often taught in college philosophy courses, but it's the underlying story is so charming that it's something you can read. I mean, a lot of it you can read to your kids, and they would just love the story. They wouldn't get the philosophy aspect of it, but they love it because it's a great adventure kind of tale underlying it. So that's kind of one of my all-time favorites. On a more professional level, there's a really interesting book came out a few years ago called The Logic of Life by a British economist, Tim Harford. And that sounds really boring, right? A little book by an economist. That's good. But it really is interesting because it's not just, you know, a bunch of numbers and statistics. He goes through, what he does is he shows how a lot of decisions that people make or activities they choose to do that can seem really strange or bizarre, or like, you know, why would you do that? Why would you make that decision? There is actually an underlying logic to them, and he shows how his area of expertise, economics, can actually reveal that logic. So that's kind of an interesting book. On a purely professional level, there's another book that came out a few years ago by James Connor called The Perfection of Marketing. Mm-hmm. Which is a great book for any small business owner, for anyone new or newish, kind of new to marketing, okay. Even someone who's been in it a few years. It's one of those books that, I mean, I read, I had already been in marketing for 15 years, but it was sort of, I wish that had been taught to me in college, actually. I wish that had been part of our course material, because it's a great book that just goes through the basics, and it does it again in an interesting way, because it's done as sort of a story. So this person goes to work at this company in marketing, and this consultant comes in, and it's written as a story, but the consultant is walking this person through all of the basics of branding and messaging and promotional channels and those things, and it's very practical. A lot of the, you know, college textbooks are more academic. They're, you know, the four P's of marketing and things like that, and these different frameworks. Whereas this is just a really practical book about what any small to mid-sized business marketing person needs to know.
Nice. Well, thank you. Three excellent. It sounds like they're excellent books. I will put those on my list. I'd love to get something new. I like that philosophy one. That one really has me intrigued. So I might have to check that out.
Classic.
Okay. Looking for some leadership advice that you would share with us. You've worked in many organizations. You have one of your own now. What is the learning lesson that you've had on leadership? The one lesson, if you give us one lesson on leadership, what would you share?
One thing that I know I definitely got wrong when I was younger and in my first few leadership roles, but I've also seen some people who've been around a while who still make the same mistake. Mm-hmm. And that is, so imagine I'm your supervisor, and we're talking about performance, and I say, Naomi, you know, we really love the job you're doing. But there's this area where, you know, we think there could, you know, there's some opportunity for improvement here, right? Mm-hmm. That's fine. But then I say, so what you need to do is, and as soon as I've said that, automatically, even if you don't want to, subconsciously, you're creating a barrier to that. You're creating resistance, because no one likes being told what to do. I mean, we just don't as especially as educated, experienced professionals, right? We don't want anyone telling us what to do. And so even if you're trying to be very positive and whatever, it's just there's a natural resist, going to be a natural resistance to that, because that's not a good way, from my standpoint, to lead. But if instead I say, so Naomi, what do you think you could do better in this area? How do you think you could improve? If I turn it around and do it that way, now I've eliminated that resistance or that barrier, because it's not me telling you what to do. It's me challenging you to think. I'm doing a couple of good things here. One, I'm helping you develop as a professional, right? Because I'm challenging you to come up with a solution, but I'm also making the solution yours. It's going to be your idea. It's going to be what you believe you should, or what you think you can do to improve. And you're going to naturally take more ownership of that and be more engaged with that, because it is, because it's your idea, because it's not my dictate or my command to you. It's something that you came up with. That may seem simple to some people, but like I say, I've seen so many managers try to lead by, you know,
like finger pointing,
telling you what to do. I'm going to tell you what to do. As opposed to, you know, encouraging people and helping people come up with their own solutions, which they're going to, like I say, just, they're going to take more and be more invested and take ownership of those ideas, because they are their own ideas.
Yeah, that's awesome. And it reminds me kind of a teaching versus coaching, right? So you're, you know, when you're in a lecture hall and you're just being taught all this information, you probably don't pick up on it so well, because you don't have the experience to walk through it in your own and make your own decisions about how you'll do it. But, you know, a coach, I would see, just stands beside you, encourages you, and position it, like you mentioned, in a way that they can understand and they can take action. So, well, and then that means they end up changing on their own, which is great.
Exactly. Now, there is a teaching element that's a little bit of, if, I mean, I can't ask you that question if you, I can't ask you a question if it's an area that you really don't know. Like asking you, what do you think you should do about search optimizing your website? You might be like, I don't know. you may not. So whatever. So in that, there are situations where the manager kind of has to teach, but that's different from, again, from dictating.
Right.
So teaching is more of, you know, just laying it out, kind of, these are things that I've seen work.
True.
And explaining how those work to you. But then again, letting you take it from there and make your own choices.
Yeah. But like you said, dictating could be a little bit more forward, a more forward approach that you might want to steer away from.
Yes.
So, yeah, absolutely. Well, thank you for that. I'm sure that helped many people out there. I always love that reminder. So what keeps you balanced when you're at your busiest, or even when you're not at your busiest, what keeps you balanced in your life?
Probably primarily my kids. They're in their 20s, but they've always, you know, been what's kept me balanced throughout my career, and now seeing them as adults, which is a whole new experience.
Oh yes.
And I can ask them things. I mean, that things that I could look up on Google, I suppose, but they get a kick out of it when I ask them things. So I really saw something about Miley Cyrus in a magazine and buying weed wax, and I had to ask my daughter what weed wax is, and she kind of rolled her eyes that it was Miley Cyrus and explained it to me.
I don't even know what that is. I might have to look it up after.
Not my world, but yeah. So it's definitely refreshing talking to them, and you know what they're doing now that they are young professionals, and kind of the situations that they're running into, and even once in a while having them come to dad for advice, which is really cool. Not too often, but once in a while. So that's great. The other thing is, I mean, again, it's Minnesota, so half the year it's frozen, but the half the year that it's not frozen is, and like I say, it was okay that business was a little bit slow this summer, because I was able to get out and do a lot of hiking and just yard work, things like that. And I've usually got my headphones on and I'm listening to a podcast, and it might be something professional work related like this. It might be Joe Rogan, whatever, anything, you know, just more newsy, informational. But just something to kind of give me a little less screen time, a little more fresh air, and yet stay mentally engaged.
Yeah, so important to just replenish your mind and get outside and do things to keep yourself balanced. And I'm glad we had the opportunity. I know business wasn't there, but having the opportunity to be able to take advantage of that in the last few months has been great. But now we need things to kind of come back, right?
Yes.
So what in last words do you have to share with our community here?
Oh boy, again, it's just that I've gotten to know so many people in the live event space over the last few years. And as I said, there's wonderful people to work with. And obviously watching what's happened over the last 8 months or so has been heartbreaking. It's been really challenging for people. And so I just, I guess I want to, you know, offer words of encouragement, but also just a reminder, quick analogy: when you're driving down a street, you drive past a building. It's really easy to tell whether there's a business that's just temporarily closed or they're gone. They're shut down, right? In the event space, your storefront, so to speak, is more often your website. So it's very important, even when there isn't really demand happening right now, to maintain that online presence, to maintain some activity, to keep people, keep your brand sort of in mind for when things do turn around, and make sure that your website, again, figuratively speaking, is like that storefront that tells you that it's temporarily closed and that doesn't look like the, you know, gone out of business and boarded up and, right. and that sort of thing. So keep your online presence fresh through this difficult time, and you know, and hopefully it doesn't last too much longer.
Sounds good. That's really great advice, because we do have lots of people who are either furloughed or businesses had to close down. Very great words. Thank you so much for that. So tell the listeners how to reach you if they wanted to get more of Tom or reach out to you for anything that you have to offer. Where can they reach you?
I spend far too much time on Twitter, as you probably guessed. So I'm at Tom Pick on Twitter, is always a good place to reach me. I'm on LinkedIn as well. I do have an Instagram account, which is Real Tom Pick, but that's mostly food pictures. a lot of outdoor cooking, smoking and grilling and those sorts of things. So, that's not really professional, but, kind of what I do with that. My website is really hard to spell, Wibiquity, which I said, again, is about being everywhere online. So actually, the easiest way is just type in tompick.com and it will redirect straight to my about page. So
I'll make sure to put it in the show notes too for everyone so they'll have it.
Great. Thank you.
Well, thank you. I'm so glad we got a chance to do this. I certainly learned a few things today. So I appreciate you and taking the time to come on. And just appreciate you being here. Thanks so much for being on the podcast.
Thank you for the opportunity, Naomi. And it's great to finally get the chance to do this.
Yes, likewise. Likewise. I appreciate Tom so much for the Planners on Purpose podcast and chatting with me about marketing. So good. Tom loves the variety and the challenges that come with solving problems for his clients, and he really loves marketing for events, and that makes me do nothing but smile. We do have the most friendly, fantastic, creative people, and I really enjoy and love this industry. If you would like to connect with Tom again, check out his information in the post show notes. And I thank you. I thank you all for being here. If you've enjoyed this podcast, give me a high five on your way out by rating the podcast before you go. I would be much appreciative. Thank you, my friends. Enjoy your